Hello and welcome to Policy Matters, the podcast from Taito, where we explore the intersection between policy and communications and the evolving role of media in shaping global tech policy. This series helps PR and communication leaders at tech companies understand how to engage with the media, build meaningful relationships, and craft stories that drive impact in a complex European and global political landscape.
In today's episode, we're joined by Diego Ducci, fellow at the Oxford China Policy Lab and associate director at the Institute for AI Policy and Strategy. Diego served in a number of roles during over a decade working in central government, including formerly as the head of AI policy at the British Treasury and also as a senior advisor to the Indonesian G20 presidency. Diego, welcome to the show.
Thank you, guys. Really pleased to be here.
Diego, we rattled off so many of those really impressive roles that you've held sort of on the almost on the other side of things, because in this series, we talked a lot about how businesses and media can shape tech policy. You've obviously seen how tech policy is actually made and decisions are arrived at. Maybe that's a nice place to start, actually. Could you tell us a little bit about how these sort of key AI and tech policy decisions actually come about and are actually made?
Yeah, very happy to. So I think the way I think about this now, having left government, is, tech and AI policy probably, and policy more broadly, probably sits in sort of two types or two buckets, kind of proactive policy choices and decisions, and I think more reactive ones as well. But the underlying process between the two, I think, is fundamentally the same. So on the proactive side, you might have a big set piece event that may be happening. It might be London Tech Week, which was just a few weeks ago here in London. It might be one of the fiscal events like the budget or the spending reviews if you're in the Treasury and thinking about fiscal policy. Or it might even be the King's Speech where the legislative agenda was going to be set out. There you do have longish lead times, maybe a few months to develop options, carry out evidence gathering, analysis, stakeholder engagement before you put various options to ministers. But then on the reactive side, there might be a bill going through Parliament and parliamentary amendments being made to it where you need to react quite quickly. Court decisions that might influence how we're interpreting different existing regulations or legislation, or an external shock or crisis like the pandemic or with some of the various things we're seeing currently in the news. But as I say, the process, very fundamentally the same: evidence gathering, stakeholder engagement, carry out the analysis, and then present ministers with options so that they can make the trade-offs, especially where there are competing objectives and maybe arbitrate as necessary.
Yeah. And I guess, is it safe to say that the reactive policies have a much shortened lead time than perhaps the more proactive ones? Does that present a bit of a challenge to you and teams making those decisions?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it makes the whole process very much more compressed, and therefore, I suppose, leads to greater risk that you could have unintended consequences and the like. But this is where I think good officials and good policymaking involves businesses providing evidence in a very kind of proactive way so that policymakers and policy advisors kind of understand some of the trade-offs and real-world impacts at short order that may arise from pursuing a specific kind of policy agenda. And I think that's kind of a good way to mitigate some of the risks that definitely arise when you're reacting quite quickly and at pace to major developments.
Well, I wanted to pick up on that because I think that was something we wanted to ask about, because when we're talking about tech sector policy specifically, the tech sector obviously moves really quickly. It's always changing. The pace of innovation is just accelerating. And the wheels of government are seen as turning very slowly. So how does that create tension between the way the industry is developing and the way the technology is developing and the way that policy is made, the way that government works? And what do you see as the key tensions there?
Yeah, so there definitely are tensions. I completely agree with that. I think two things I would say to this, quite a common reflection and criticism of government and policymaking, which is kind of the pace at which it's made. The first I would say is, some of the like the slower, more deliberate, considerate sort of thinking around legislation, for instance, is quite deliberate and it's quite intentional. Like, it's really important to have democratic scrutiny and proper deliberation of policies that may be pursued, especially in tech and AI, where there's so much virgin territory and it isn't clear entirely what option to pursue, and the trade-offs are actually quite finely balanced and depend on prioritizing certain value judgments, for instance. So kind of that slower pace, I think, is really important to ensure you have robust, accountable policy and you avoid unintended consequences that may harm the prospects of a business or citizens, for instance. An example of where I have seen in the past some of these tensions arise might be in procurement, for instance. Like, rightly so, you know, businesses, startups in particular, they're really keen to for government to make quick decisions around procurement. Sometimes, you know, policy and government, policymakers and government need to move it more slowly because transparency is really important, accountability, good value for money for the taxpayer as well. And that can lead to some tensions. But I think there are ways around this. And there are increasingly, I think, the current government is doing things that are quite forward-leaning in terms of moving quite quickly in some areas. Earlier this year, for instance, there was a consultation on an AI growth lab, a sandboxing program, and that would enable legislation to keep pace with technology developing. And I think, for instance, there's a really innovative, forward-looking and future-proofing the legislative framework for tech and AI policy, for instance. So there are ways around some of these constraints.
Do you feel that those, you know, those constraints and those obligations to, you know, transparency and the other things you mentioned, do you feel those are understood by the tech sector? And have you seen that change in the last few years as tech companies get more involved with policy conversations?
Yeah, absolutely. I do. I think it varies between different companies and how sophisticated a company's policy and comp strategy might be. Where I've seen it deployed sort of more effectively and where I see the nuance being really understood is where there has been movement of individuals between the public and private sector. I think that actually is really, it's really important because I think it gives... It provides a perspective on what it's like and the incentive structures on both sides of the fence. And so recommendations are more nuanced, they're more tractable, they make more sense in the sense that they're kind of might address specific policy objectives that ministers might care about, for instance, in a way that maybe you just might not be able to do if you haven't seen what the conversations are like inside of government and with ministers, for instance.
So you favour more crossover between public and private sector?
Yeah, I definitely think more than zero is great. I think obviously there are the classical trade-offs that come with, you know, the revolving door and regulatory capture and those sorts of kind of theoretical questions around policymaking, which I think we should be live to. But in general, I would say that cross-pollination between the two sectors are really important. And in particular in tech and AI, where the expertise doesn't always sit in government, right? And so you might be designing some policy very well intentioned, which may have unintended consequences broader, like further down the line. And I think you, to avoid some of those challenges and risks, having people who've been on both sides is really important.
And obviously, even, you know, within government itself, it's not just, you know, kind of one big machine. There's lots of different departments, lots of overlapping priorities. Can you talk a little bit about how that interplay works and how government departments work together? And then I guess more broadly, how tech companies can engage with them? You know, where do they start if they want to be involved, they want to contribute, if they want to perhaps influence policy, how can they start in terms of engaging with all of those different departments, different elements of government that are working on parallel but overlapping approaches?
Yeah,
that's so questions in one there, but
I think it gets to the heart of why some decision making in AI and tech in particular is quite difficult at the moment. So I think two broad things to say. I think the first is, you know, government is kind of a huge beast of a machinery. You have lots of different departments who have lots of different incentives. You don't always have line of sight into what different departments may be thinking about a specific issue. And sometimes they can be talking about across purposes in a way. So I think understanding that from business is really important. It's really important to understand that, you know, the advice that Minister X in, you know, the Department for Science, Innovation and Tech may be receiving might be quite different to the advice that Minister Y might be receiving in DESNZ or DCMS or wherever else it might be. And so having kind of that understanding of different incentives existing and different objectives existing in different departments is kind of the first step. The second thing I would say is that being able to, as a tech business, for instance, you may be more inclined to speak to, you know, a tech department and officials in the tech department and the Secretary of State for Technology. But actually, they might be advocates and evangelists for your issues and for your concerns, and the real blocker may exist in a different department. And so while it may feel slightly unnatural and it would be a bit odd for you, you might actually want to engage with one of the departments that's potentially blocking a decision for good reasons potentially, but who may not understand the ins and outs of your industry. And so a more sophisticated policy engagement strategy might be to, you know, speak to the tech department, but also speak to the other departments who may be potentially causing some frictions.
How do you find that out?
So I think media plays an important role here, right? And I think you will see in news reports, you will see, you know, sometimes gossip, sometimes informed journalism, which sort of tells you kind of how different ministers might be thinking on specific issues. Also, some of it, On some issues, it's potentially quite obvious. So, for instance, AI infrastructure, big demand on energy, lots of demand on water, although the evidence there, as I understand it, isn't necessarily clear. And so that gives you a sense of, well, actually, maybe I should be speaking to DEFRA, given that they will be the department who are responsible for kind of the environment and kind of those issues, and also DESNZ on the kind of net zero side, for instance, as well.
Yeah. Diego, I never want to ask the negative of this question, but we talked about different departments almost having different levels of readiness when it comes to AI or different levels of understanding when it comes to the technology. Do you think there are any examples of government departments who are doing a particularly great job at understanding AI, implementing it? Maybe they have people who have worked in the private sector who've come across who have really shaken things up.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, DSIT is obviously very good at this because they have to be. And the AI Security Institute is a relatively new kind of agency within government. It's packed with absolute experts on kind of AI research and AI safety and security issues. That's been an example of where the government has brought in genuine expertise from the private and third sectors into government to inform policy that's being made on really tricky issues across the board. But something more public facing, I think, is potentially the Department for Transport. I think they have done a really good job in preparing for what may be, you know, a massive change in how many of us live our lives with robo-taxis and automated vehicles, right? So embodied AI. And this is really important because there are real world impacts to getting, you know, policy on automated vehicles wrong, right? Because you could have lots of kind of incidents, for instance. So safety is paramount for them. And I think they've done a really incredible job developing a policy and legislative framework to enable the deployment of autonomous vehicles in the UK, some multilateral work as well through international bodies to make sure kind of we're aligned to some degree with other jurisdictions. And I think from a public facing perspective, it could genuinely really transform just how we live our everyday lives. So I think they're doing a great job with the Centre for Connected and Autonomous Vehicles, which I think brings in that more deeper expertise on the sector.
Yeah, you mentioned different jurisdictions. It's almost as if you've seen where the next section is going. But I noticed one of the departments you didn't mention was the Foreign Office. Now, I think when it comes to UK tech policy, AI policy, we think about the government here and what they're doing. But obviously, it's in a very interdependent world. You've got lots of different jurisdictions coming up with lots of different policies. I guess when you were in government, or when you look at sort of government departments now, how much of the tech policy thinking is shaped by domestic priorities versus different jurisdictions and interoperability with the European Union or North America or even further afield?
Yeah, so my reflection of my time in government on that, those sorts of issues, is that, you know, tech is inherently cross-border and global, right? More or less, as soon as technology is made or a service is deployed, it will tend to just kind of diffuse through the internet and through the ecosystem. And so things move quite quickly. And, you know, for better or worse, many of the biggest companies, Frontier AI, for instance, are not located in the UK, right? They might be located in other parts of the world, whether that's the US or kind of elsewhere. And I think, you know, the leaders in different types of businesses who may have footprints all over the world will be thinking about different jurisdictions and the regulations that apply there. And so it's really important that government is also thinking about how different jurisdictions are going to legislate and regulate new industries, because it will inevitably impact the UK as well. In the conversations that I saw within government, I think on some of these types of issues, one thing that was always happening was consultation with the government's extensive global network across embassies, you know, across capitals, in whether that's in Brussels or Washington, D.C., San Francisco, Beijing, Tokyo, wherever it might be, to learn about what's going on and how people are thinking about policy in those jurisdictions. And also to learn lessons, especially as you said, Jack, lots of jurisdictions are grappling with similar questions and challenges on AI and tech, whether that's impacts on labor markets, whether that's online safety, whether that's how to deploy AI kind of at pace. And so learning from those examples has been really important. One thing I was doing in particular, which I think is really important for some of your listeners, is many tech businesses have footprints in other jurisdictions, and that gives them a really, really unique perspective on what is working or what is impacting them in another jurisdiction. So whenever I was having conversations with multinationals in particular, I would be asking, well, what's going on in you know, across the pond or in kind of Europe, and what's working there that you think is we should be learning lessons from in the UK?
Yeah, that's such a good point. Do you think, because obviously industry bodies come up with some fantastic reports into what's happening in different jurisdictions across the world, how important are those kind of touch points with industry representatives, trade bodies, when it comes to working out which jurisdictions you want to emulate or which lessons you want to learn perhaps from policies which haven't always turned out for the best?
Yeah, so I think trade bodies and industry representative groups, they play a hugely important role. I think, you know, as an official in the Treasury working on tech or AI, my team would be relatively small. So you're massively outnumbered by a number of businesses and policy professionals and media professionals there who may want to speak to you. And so the type of bodies you mention provide a really time efficient way to understand the trends that are happening in the sector, how different companies within a sector or subsector are thinking about specific issues. Often the issues they are considering have felt quite domestic in from my experience, but I think, you know, you definitely can glean really good information about, you know, how the trends that are impacting kind of UK businesses in the tech sector, how those compare to other jurisdictions as well, for instance, right? I think data centers is an obvious example where we've seen other jurisdictions react differently where depending on where they are in the cycle. Ireland, for instance, is quite famous for having a bit of a backlash on data center kind of building, for instance. And so you can anticipate some of those things in trade associations and trade bodies. do provide some evidence to help understand some of those trends that might happen in the UK as well.
Yeah. The UK is often positioned as this bridge between an American model, which is focused very much on perhaps a market-led approach, and you've got the EU model, which is a bit more rules-based. Do you think that's true? And do you think businesses and trade bodies have helped to shape that? Or is it just the UK's sort of new role to act as that bridge post-Brexit?
So I worked in government kind of pre and post Brexit, right? And I think my sense is that position and that framing and that unique selling point of the UK has been a consistent throughout that period, sort of both pre and post. So I don't think that has changed massively. What I do think, however, is kind of perhaps the emphasis on that bridge function has maybe become a bit more acute, given that, you know, UK politicians and ministers will no longer be kind of at the decision table in kind of European regulatory decisions, for instance, right? And so identifying a unique selling point is important in that sort of world and context. And I think, the government at the moment, or just within the last few months, couple of years, had done a really good job in kind of acting as a bridge, for instance, and I think historically has done that function, and my expectation is they will continue to do that function, because English is that language that bridges the two sides and kind of our position. So my sense is, yes, probably becoming more of a topic, but has always been there in the background as a key selling point for the UK.
I'd love to bring the conversation back round to media. You were talking about how third-party organisations and think tanks can be really great ways of getting insight, getting intelligence, understanding the trends that are going on in the industries. What role does media play in influencing the decisions taken by government when it comes to tech policy?
Yeah, so I think, you know, traditional media still plays a huge role in shaping the debate, shaping the issues that ministers care about, and what they're hearing about from their press secretaries, for instance. So I think that, you know, has been the case for a long time. I don't see it changing massively kind of in the immediate term. So there's definitely that kind of agenda setting and that kind of prioritization function that comes from the media. Increasingly, though, I think kind of digital first media, you know, like X or Twitter, Substack as well, I think increasingly, and LinkedIn as well, are probably playing kind of a bigger role with officials as well, officials who are trying to understand what the sentiment is like, maybe amongst entrepreneurs, maybe amongst different stakeholder groups on a specific issue. And I suspect having a proactive and a very active presence on those different social media platforms going forward for businesses will be like an important strategy to make sure that your concerns and your issues are in the back of the mind of officials who will be writing advice to ministers and advising them on what to do on and what decisions to take on particular issues.
You can tell what I'm getting at here, right? We're just looking for some free advice for our clients. They're keen to engage with ministers, share their perspective on certain issues. What's the best way of doing that? So I think that's really helpful. But I can push a little bit further. You know, in your time in government, what sort of media would you consume? You know, where would you go to get, you know, as you say, an understanding of trends, an understanding of what was happening in business? What kind of media would you still consume?
Yeah. So the obvious candidates from like a Treasury perspective, the FT, The Economist, right? The FT is widely regularly read in the Treasury and genuinely does kind of really influence how officials are thinking about policy and sort of the questions you might be asked by a minister will be, you know, front of the page of the FT. And increasingly, I think they're doing more kind of tech reporting. But then there are the newer outlets as well. Politico, I think, has done some interesting stories on tech and AI. I was a massive fan. This is a bit niche, actually, but I was a massive fan of MIT Tech Review. I think it touches on kind of some really global issues. And I remember reading stuff, for instance, on what was happening in China on data centers. And I was like, oh, you know, this suggests there might be a trend. And as a policy official, it helped me anticipate what I thought might come down my inbox in 3 months, 6 months from now. And I think being able to dedicate some time to kind of more detailed reporting, I think kind of is important, but increasingly very difficult where you have, you know, competing interests, competing objectives on your time. It could be quite difficult to consume a lot of media, but those were my go-to, Rebecca.
No, thank you. That's great to know. I think, you know, a lot of our clients are really interested in contributing their views on the direction of the travel of the sector, either for shaping policy or for really helping to explain it to their audiences, you know, really to give their perspective on how it's going to influence the sector. Have there been instances, you know, during your time in government where perhaps you had read something or you've seen a report from a private company and thought, I want to know what they think about this?
Yeah, definitely. I'll try to avoid names, but I think open source has been a really interesting kind of topic and issue that some stakeholders in the ecosystem, some companies, some think tanks as well, were producing quite interesting reporting and analysis and evidence on. And I think it was really important, actually, because they were engaging with me and my team in the Treasury on an issue that, generally speaking, just isn't kind of a core economic financial issue that Treasury officials will normally be engaging with. But the way they did this well was by developing evidence, putting it through a kind of an economic perspective and lens, and translating some of the open source technicalities into why this matters for growth, why this matters for innovation. And I think that's a very good way of translating some of the stuff into kind of the language that your stakeholders in government will care about, whether that's the Treasury, Number 10, or, you know, another department.
What makes, you alluded to it a little bit there, but what makes good evidence?
So I think, I've definitely was thinking about that when I was kind of receiving different proposals from different companies or the like. I think the use of think tanks is actually quite powerful, right? Because I think it removes this feeling of kind of vested interest and lobbying. And, you know, think tanks will be often using, you know, really sophisticated qualitative, quantitative analysis, and will be doing, you know, impartial evidence gathering and analysis as well. And I think seeing a perspective brought to us by research that had been commissioned, it might have been by a company or other, to a think tank, I think that was incredibly powerful, because it kind of removed that you know, inherent bias that may exist. And so as an official, where you're really worried about providing the best evidence to your ministers, I think it enabled, you know, me and other people to be able to do that effectively.
I suppose, Diego, it helps to build trust in people who are giving evidence as well. If you know that the quality of the information they're giving you is good, and that you can then use that to inform ministers to make a decision, you're more likely to go back to them again when another policy that's in their ecosystem or their sphere pops up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the most overlooked sort of behaviours, maybe we might call them, from businesses and companies is just really investing time in developing an open dialogue with officials, so that when an actual decision needs to be made, you've developed that trust and you've developed that relationship, so that you can actually have that more kind of open and frank discussion when the decision actually needs to be made, rather than just focusing on, yeah, I have this issue, who can I speak to in the Treasury or wherever else it might be on it. And there were a few, again, companies who were doing this really effectively in the UK, and more often than not, as I kind of alludes to, like, echoes a point I made earlier, they were from individuals who had been inside a government in the past and who understood the sort of constraints I would be facing and what is an effective way of developing those relationships.
Brilliant. Diego, I know we're fast approaching the end, but I suppose one final question. There's a lot happening in the tech policy space at the moment. What's the one thing you would say is really exciting that's coming down the pipeline that you think everybody probably should be keeping an eye on?
Yeah. So very early into my role, I remember hearing lots of noise about agentic systems and agentic AI. And I was quite excited at the time. And then, you know, 1 month passed, 2 months passed, and so on and so forth. And there were no real huge developments. My sense now from discussions I've had with various different kind of individuals and companies and think tanks and whatnot is that now you are getting to a system where you could have a potential sort of pivot point and where agentic AI systems are genuinely being deployed, whether that's in payment systems or, you know, in other parts of existing industries. And I expect that those capabilities just to accelerate and to get even faster, especially as, you know, you get the automation of more R&D. And so I think that is a really exciting kind of opportunity for UK businesses. I think it potentially requires huge transformation from and advice on how precisely to do this. I don't think anybody really knows the best way to do this, but this is where I think, again, businesses can help inform some of the advice that officials will be putting to ministers on how to drive the adoption of agentic systems and how to do so in a safe and responsible way.
Brilliant. Well, look, it sounds like there's a huge opportunity for businesses to help shape that conversation, shape that tech policy landscape. And Diego, thank you so much for a really, really insightful conversation. That was Diego Ducci, fellow at the Oxford China Policy Lab and former head of AI policy at the British Treasury.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for this edition of Policy Matters, part of the Without Borders podcast series from Taito, the only PR and communications agency built to scale tech companies faster across Europe.